to Proverbs 22. And we're going to go down to verse 6, which is probably, when you think about child rearing, is one of the verses we often look at. Proverbs 22. And look with me down to verse number 6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. That verse has been used a lot to teach things that I don't think are biblical. Some people have said, well, as long as you train your child to live for the Lord, someday, sometime, that's what they're going to do. Well, I would say that is not true, because I know people who were trained up and did never, as far as I know, their whole life never really lived for the Lord. But it is in the Bible, and it does mean something. And so we're going to start from that verse, look at a bunch of other verses, and talk about this idea about developing a child's character, which the title tells you kind of the direction we're going to go with this. If you think about putting together a puzzle, how many have ever put together a puzzle? Big piece, 500 piece, 1,000 piece, big puzzle. All right. Now, different people have different ways of putting it together. My wife's real good at putting together puzzles. She does around the edge and all that, and then she fills in towards the middle. She will separate all into like light type pieces and look at the thing and try to put, you know, big sections together. When I do a puzzle, I don't do a whole lot of them. And usually I'm just walking by. I do a couple of things when my wife's doing a puzzle. One is I try to, and she's caught on to this. I can't really get away with it anymore, but I try to, while she's not looking, I try to reach over and pick up one piece and put it in my pocket and then walk away, so that she is at the end, when everything's not, that one piece is missing, I can walk over and say, there, I finished. And, but she's caught on that. Every time I walk by, she's looking, don't be touching my pieces. The other thing I like to do is, and this is just because I'm not trying to put the whole thing together, but she was like, can you help me? So I'll pick up one piece, and I'll look at that piece, and I'll look at the picture, and I'll look at that piece, and I may stay there 5 minutes just going, there it is right there. And I'll go, oh, you haven't put that together yet. Okay, let's put this one aside. And I'll pick up another one, just stare at it. And then finally, I'll find a piece, and I'll say, I know, it has to go right here, and I'll fit it in there. But then the other piece fits with it, because that's not really where it goes. It kind of looks like it goes there, but it doesn't fit. And the reason you know it doesn't fit, because nothing else fits with it. It may fit that piece is touching, but the pieces that are supposed to be there don't fit with it. Now, I say that because that, I think, applies to Bible teaching and Bible understanding. When the pieces don't fit together in the puzzle, you know you got the piece in the wrong place. And the same thing is true about the Bible. As we're trying to put the Bible together, have a complete understanding of the Word of God, as you're putting the pieces together of the Bible, if they don't fit together, they shouldn't be there. And if this fits to this, but other things don't fit to that, then it shouldn't be there either. So everything in the Bible has to fit together. I can't simply take this doctrine and fit it with this doctrine in such a way that the other doctrines don't fit with those doctrines. So everything has to fit together. That's how God's Word is constructed. There's nothing in the Bible that doesn't fit. It all fits together, because that's how God gives it. It's one revelation, complete revelation from the Lord. So this is truth, the Word of God. All these pieces, if you will, of this puzzle of the Word of God fit together. Unless we're trying to fit together wrong, then the problem is with us. Now here's why I say that. If Proverbs 22:6 is a guarantee, and there's some people who would tell me, who would argue with me, they say, no, that is a guarantee that your child can turn out for the Lord. If you do just the right things, it's a guarantee. Right there it is in the Bible. Well, I do believe there's a guarantee there, but it's not that you guarantee that they're going to be spiritual followers of Christ. Now, here's why I would say that. If there is a guarantee of, I'll use the word program, because that's basically the idea. You're training them, teaching them, programming them to live spiritually. So if there is a guarantee of programming spirituality, then that would not fit with free will. Well, how do I know? Well, go with me to Joshua 24. Hold your... probably don't need to hold your place in Proverbs. Joshua 24, if you will. We'll be flipping a bunch of places here. Joshua 24. And look with me at verse 15. And if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your father served that were on the other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Now he's talking there to people who were not the generation that came out of Egypt. This is the generation after that, and probably including generation that came even after that. So there are descendants here. So yet he says, you need to make a choice. So if we can make a choice whether or not to serve God, then that means we're not being programmed to live spiritually, because we have a free will. We can make a choice of this. If you program a computer, that computer doesn't have a choice not to run that program. If you push that button, tell it to do that thing, that's what it does. It just runs the program. So there's no free will there. But yet for us, there is free will. So if we can program spirituality, then free will would not fit. And if there's a guarantee of programming spirituality, then it would not fit with backsliding. Did you know that people of God can backslide? They can get away from the Lord. Their heart can grow cold. That's why we need revival. If there was no backsliding, we'd never need revival. You got saved, you got on fire, and you stayed on fire. But the truth is, we do backslide. We get cold at times. And so if you could program spirituality, there would never be backsliding, because they're just what you programmed them to be. Well, go with me to 2 Chronicles 24. 2 Chronicles 24. Here's an interesting story. We talked about this when we talked about the bad advice series. But Jehoiada, I'm in verse 15 of 2 Chronicles 24. But Jehoiada waxed old and was full of days when he died. 130 years old was when he died. Now he was the priest, the high priest, who rescued the king when he was a little boy. Remember, and he raised that boy up at 7 or 8 years of age. He crowned him king, and he was his main counselor. Okay, but Jehoiada waxed old, then he dies. Verse 16, they buried him in the city of David among the kings, because he had done good in Israel, both toward God and toward his house. Now, after the death of Jehoiada came the princes of Judah and made obeisance to the king. Then, watch this, the king hearkened unto them. And they left the house of the Lord God of their fathers, and served groves and idols, and wrath came upon Judah and Jerusalem for this their trespass. So here's a fellow who was trained by the high priest to do the right things, but yet the high priest dies off, and now this king is backsliding. So, again, we see that you cannot program guarantee spirituality in young people. So, if you could program spirituality, free will would not fit, backsliding would not fit. Go with me to Romans 3, and I'll show you a third thing that, this is just quick things, but a third thing that would not fit. Romans 3. So if I could guarantee my kids would live for Jesus just by the way I trained them, then I'm kind of guaranteeing their free will would not be there. And I'm eliminating backsliding. Romans chapter 3. Look with me in verse 10. These should be familiar if you're a soul winner. Verse 10, as it is written, there is, what's the next word? None righteous, no, not one. That includes me, that includes you, that includes our kids. Look at verse 23. For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. So if you could program spirituality, that means there is no free will, there is no backsliding, and you could eliminate their sin nature. But none of that is true. Those pieces don't fit with the piece of we're programming them to live for Jesus, and they're just guaranteed to turn out that way. And so I would tell you that Proverbs 22:6 is not programming our children to live for Jesus. Rather, it's training them and teaching them that is true, but you're not guaranteeing, there's no programming that guarantees that. And the truth is this, here's the statement for us. How can sinners program sinners not to be sinners? How can you, as a mom and dad who's a sinner, raise your little baby sinners and guarantee they're not going to be sinners? You can't. Only the Lord does the work of grace. We cannot bypass that or go around that or eliminate the need for that. So victory over sin is a daily battle. And this daily battle must be fought in the power of the Holy Spirit. Now, we as parents can help equip our children to fight the battle and to fight the battle better, but they still have to fight the battle. Here's the truth of the matter. No matter who your mom and dad is, no matter what church you go to, you're going to have to fight the spiritual battle someday for yourself. Every young person has to eventually go through that. That's just what life is. And so we do not program spirituality, but we train and teach. So that brings us back to Proverbs 22:6. If Proverbs 22:6 is not a guarantee of spirituality, then what is the Lord talking about? Train up a child in the way he's going, and when he old, he will not depart from it. I believe this. I believe it is teaching us and pointing us to this, that we as parents have a great influence over the character of our children. That we have a lot to do with what they are on the inside as far as how they think about life, how they think about this world, how they respond to things that go on in their life, about just character type things in their life. And I believe this can be developed. It should be developed in a child in a way that will stay with them throughout life. And I'll say this, and it may be later in this study as well, but I think one of the greatest opportunities parents have is the development of their child's character. It stays with them. It nags them. Even if they don't do everything you taught them to do, it's something that just nags them because you're not there, so the character starts nagging them and reminding them of things you taught them. So, how then can we do this? Now, there's a whole lot of areas that we could go into, but I want to, just for the sake of time, get down to four areas that parents can and should influence in the character development of their children. So I'm going to give you four, kind of the bigger ones maybe, and then you can develop some thoughts on your own after that. So let's go to the first one. Now, you haven't written anything down, but now you get to. Ready? Number one is this. I'm going to give you the main thoughts and then give you some verses later. Number one is this. Emphasize the importance and blessing of work. Work should never be something that's like a curse word, like a bad word, like a dirty word. It's a good word. You know what distinguishes those typically who succeed and those who don't? Those who are willing to work. Is it not talent? It's not. I mean, some things you can. You know, Dr. Bob Jones Sr. said this, which is a great statement. You can borrow brains, but you can't borrow character. If you don't know how to do something, especially today, if you did not know how to do something and you wanted to do it, what would you do? Huh? YouTube it. Exactly. You'd go to YouTube and someone would show you and say, okay, you have to have the character to do it, but there's a plenty of places that you can borrow brains. But it's us as parents want to develop this character of work in our children. Now, why is this idea of work so important? I'm going to give you four thoughts about it. Go with me to Genesis 3. A good work ethic is one of the best things you can give to your child. Genesis 3, look with me in verse 17. And unto Adam he said, because thou hast hearkened to the voice of thy wife, and hast eaten of the tree of which I commanded thee, saying, thou shalt not eat of it, cursed is the ground for thy sake. In sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life. Thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth to thee, and thou shalt eat of the herb of the field. In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread till thou return into the ground, for out of it wast thou taken, for dust thou art, and into dust shalt thou return. Now go with me to 2 Thessalonians. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. In verse 10, for even when we were with you, this we commanded you, that if any would not work, neither should he eat. For we hear that there are some which walk among you disorderly, working not at all, but are busybodies. Now them that are such we command and exhort by our Lord Jesus Christ, that with quietness they work and eat their own bread. But ye brethren, be not weary in well-doing. So again, the command here is the idea of work. And he told Adam, this is what you're going to do. You've sinned. Now I'm going to curse the ground, I'm going to make it hard for you, and you're going to sweat and do it, but this is actually going to be a good thing, because if you're working, it's going to keep you from being a busybody now that you have a sin nature and get you in trouble. So, here's the first blessing of work. Work is a defense against sin. You ever hear this statement? Idle hands are the what? Devil's workshop. Lazy people always get themselves in trouble. You know why? Because they have extra free time doing nothing, and our minds start spinning, and we get involved in things we shouldn't get involved in. So work is actually a blessing. Being busy is a blessing. Having goals and being able to motivate yourself, propel yourself to do things is a blessing. It defends us against sin. It keeps us from being idle, which gets us in trouble. Being a busybody is what 2 Thessalonians calls it. Let me show you another place. Proverbs chapter 10. Proverbs 10. So work is a blessing. My guess is this, it's just a guess, that you don't always feel that way. I do not always feel that way. I have not. There's times when I'm thinking, the last thing I want to do right now is go to work. But overall, the overall teaching is that work is a blessing. It gives us purpose in life. It allows us to accomplish things. It gives us dignity. Work brings dignity to man. And is also a defense against sin. Proverbs 10, look with me in verse 4. He becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent maketh rich. He that gathereth in summer is a wise summer. He that sleepeth in harvest is a son that causeth shame. Now go back to the New Testament again. 1 Timothy chapter 5. Verse 8. But if any provide not for his own, talking about his own family, his own household there, and especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. So here's the second thing about work. Work is how we can provide for our family. Now I'm going to speak, as far as the world is concerned, something that's heretical. You ready? It is not the government's job to provide for you. God gave that responsibility to us to provide for our own. Now, I always got to stop. That's a wide brush. Some people are, if you're retired and you have Social Security, I'm not condemning you, okay? If you're in a point where you're kind of in a, just, you know, something happened and now you have to have a short-term help safety net from the government, I'm not condemning you. What I'm condemning is the idea that I can have all these kids and look to the government and say, what are you going to do for me? Okay, wait a minute, you had the kids, this is your responsibility. So work is how we provide for our family. It's a blessing that God gives us, that we have some motivation to do something, to earn some money, to put food on the table, roof over the head, clothes on the back. There's a third, look with me again, back to Proverbs. And these next two places will be both in Proverbs. Proverbs 13. So we're talking about developing character, talking about developing the character of a work ethic, emphasizing the importance and the blessing of it. It's how it defends us against sin. So you're helping your child to be at least have that opportunity, that potential. It's how we provide for our family. We're not looking for handouts. We're not looking for putting it on everyone else. We're putting the sweat equity and trying to make things work out. Look at Proverbs 13. Look at verse 4. The soul of the sluggard desireth and hath nothing, but the soul of the diligent shall be made fat. Go back to chapter 12, look with me in verse 24. Just actually a few verses before that. The hand of the diligent shall bear rule, but the slothful shall be under tribute. So the difference is, or the connection here, look at verse 4. It's the soul of the diligent shall be made fat, so it increases, but not only increases your goods in that way, but in verse 24 of 12 it says, you shall bear rule. In other words, not only are you going to increase your goods, but you're going to do well. You're going to have rule or succeed in ways that others are going to fail in. So another aspect of this, work allows us to succeed with less talent or resources. There's an old statement, the harder I work, the luckier I get. And so the idea that work allows us, even those who have more talent than you, have maybe better resources. You can outdo them, you can go beyond them just through hard work. They can have the knowledge, they can have the experience, but if they're not willing to put in the work, you can surpass them because of a work ethic. And then one more, Ephesians 4. Now, I'm going to tie something to this in point two that kind of balances it a little bit, but I'll wait to point two to get that. Ephesians, if you will, Ephesians chapter 4. Go with me to verse 28. Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the thing which is good, that he may have to give to him that needeth. So here's a fourth aspect of that, and that is this: work gives us opportunity to help others. So I said a moment ago, it's not the government's job to take care of us. Let me add to that, it's not the government's job to provide charity through my tax money. If I want to take the money I earn and be a blessing to someone, that should be my choice. It should not be the government who takes my money and gives it. Hey, we want to help this person. No, if I want to help them, let me help them. It's not the government's job to take the wealth of one person to help the poverty of another. That is the job of Christian charity. I think it's right to do. I think it's proper to do. I think we ought to have a heart and a compassion towards other. I do not think it's the government's job to enforce that. It should be our own desire to be a blessing to others. It should not be a force by the government. But the Bible is teaching here that one of the reasons we work is so we can do that. We should have money, earning money, that we're not just hoarding into our barns, but we're actually taking it and being a blessing to others. And the only way we can do that is by working and having that to share with them. So part of the blessing of being at work is we can be a blessing to others. Now, how you teach that to young people is varied based on their age and situation. Daily chores, obviously, is one of it. It's good to give. Now, based on the age of the child, the chores would be compared to that. What you would do for a 5-year-old as far as chores is probably different than a 15-year-old. But it's always good to give them chores. Let them learn what it is to work. Probably another thing is schoolwork. Make them do their work. Make them do what they're supposed to do and not take the easy way out. But anyways, we're talking about emphasizing the importance and blessing of work. That's primary, I think, in developing a child's character, teaching them that character, that work ethic. There's a second one that I want to get to quickly because it kind of bounces out the first one. Number two is this: emphasize personal responsibility. It kind of goes with it, but it's different, and I think you'll understand as we get into it. I usually say this about opinions, but I'll change my quote and use the word excuses. Excuses are like armpits. Everyone has them, and they usually stink. Okay, so that's what excuses are like. Everyone has excuses. Why they're not doing what they should do. Why this is what they should have done, and they didn't do it. Everyone can come up with an excuse. Personal responsibility is when one keeps his word, pays his bills, because it is his word and his bills. Wouldn't it be great if everyone who said they're going to do something did it? And you didn't have to have like 10 sheets of paper with signatures and thumbprints and initials and blood, you know, given just to guarantee that they're going to do it. But you know why they have to have 10 pages? Because people don't keep their word. And so they have to, you know, how can we find some way for you to make sure you do what you're telling us, because we don't trust you're going to do it. Because typically people don't keep their word or pay their bills. Even if no one else is being responsible, it is still incumbent upon us, if we have character, to be the one who is responsible. I don't need you to be responsible for me to be responsible. I need me to be responsible for me to be responsible. Psalms 15. Psalms 15. Look with me in verse 4. In whose eyes, Psalms 15:4, in whose eyes a vile person is contemned, but he honoreth them that fear the Lord. Now watch this last statement here. He that sweareth to his own hurt, look at the last three words, and changeth not. In other words, you make a commitment and you keep it. You say you're going to do it and you do it. You say you're going to be there and you're going to be there. If I go to Dale Stein and I say, Dale, I am going to do X. I'm going to meet you at, okay, let's say we're going to go soul winning. I'm going to meet you at Mitchell's ice cream. And we're going to witness all the ice cream flavors, okay? And so if I tell him I'm going to be there, and if I'm going to be there at 11 o'clock, What time should I be there? Yeah, exactly. That's the way I look at it. Be there, yeah. If I'm there at 11 o'clock, I already feel like I'm already nervous because, I should have been here earlier. Okay, I'm going to be there prior to 11 probably because I don't want him waiting for me. But if I can't be there at 11, what should I do? Should I just say, well, he'll understand? Or should I watch? Should I let him know? Why? Because I have to take responsibility. Now, let me tell you, isn't that pretty simple? I don't think you came to church tonight to figure that out, but I can tell you most of the world hasn't figured it out. They make all kinds of commitments and never keep their commitments, never tell anyone. They just don't show up, never tell you, and you have no idea. And you have let me vent for a moment. Why do you have to chase them to find out why they're not keeping what they told you they're going to do? If you said it, I shouldn't have to chase you down. You should be chasing me down to let me know why you're not keeping your word. And sometimes you can't keep it. Sometimes things happen. Okay? Sometimes you can't just be there. Well, then you let them know. You tell them. You're the one responsible for what you said you're going to do. Proverbs 6. Let's go to another place. Proverbs 6. Now, I still haven't got to the balance part of it, but we'll get there in a minute. Proverbs 6, look at verse 1. My son, if thou be surety for thy friend, if thou stricken thy hand with a stranger, thou art snared with the words of thy mouth, thou art taken with the words of thy mouth. Now, the whole idea is basically he's co-signing agreeing, being the agreeer to this debt. This debt's going to be paid, and he's kind of warning you to be careful about that. But what he's been saying is this, that if you have some commitment, then it's on you to make sure that this commitment is actually going to go through. If you committed to this loan on behalf of this friend, you better go to your friend and make sure everything's how it should be, because it's your responsibility because you made the commitment. So it is our responsibility to be responsible for the things that it is our responsibility. Now, watch this. Both our work ethic and our personal responsibility must be seen in light of our relationship with the Lord. Now, this I told you was going to be the balance. This is a little bit of a switch of a thought, so I'm going to go a little slow here. So, the first point was the work ethic. This point is responsibility, and I'm tying both of those, work ethic and personal responsibility, to our responsibility, our relationship with the Lord. Now, let me tell you why. Working hard and being responsible will most likely make you succeed more than other people. It's really not hard to be successful. Now, when I say successful, I'm not talking about Bill Gates success. Okay, I'm not talking about, you're going to be the person on all the billboards. I'm just talking about making a living, paying your bills, having a decent life. If you start out young and you have a good work ethic, and you take personal responsibility, most likely at the end of your life, you're going to do well. But that's the danger. Because without the Lord, that doing well becomes selfish and carnal. One of the dangers about young people who grow up in good fundamental Baptist churches, when they learn work ethic, their parents are teaching them character, they're learning how to present themselves, they're learning manners and morality. If they walk away from the world and from the Lord and get into the world, most of the time those people are golden. The world loves them. They know how to present themselves. They know how to work. They know how to do well. I mean, these people do well in the world. And the world gobbles them up. But that's not why we're raising them. We're not raising them for the world, we're raising them for the Lord. And so that's why it must be tied to a relationship with the Lord. Because if all you have is work ethic, is all you have is this personal responsibility, but you're not tying it to the Lord, and you get away from the Lord, yeah, you'll succeed, but that's not the success that the Lord wants. The Lord wants success in His work, living for Him, and a life that honors Him. So working hard and being responsible will make you succeed more than others, but also can make you selfish and carnal. The gain that this gives you, the gain becomes more important than God Himself. Therefore, brings us to this thought, personal responsibility must include our responsibility to God. So we talk about emphasize personal responsibility. Yes, keep your word. Yes, pay your bill. But also make sure that you have a relationship with the Lord. That is your responsibility. Every young person has a responsibility to develop their own relationship with the Lord. You cannot simply, and I know it's trite and it's said often, but it's a true statement. You can't just go on your parents' coattails. Eventually, it has to be your relationship, what you believe, what you think, how you feel about it. It can't simply be, why do you go to church? Well, my parents go to church. Why do you read the Bible? Well, my mom and dad they all get us together, and we have to get our Bibles out, and that's just what we do. Well, I'm glad your parents go to church, and I'm glad they have family devotions, but what is it to you? What is your relationship? You have to take personal responsibility for your own relationship. Colossians 3. Colossians chapter 3. And that obviously it changes as you get older. You know, the responsibility, again, of a 5-year-old in this is different than a 15-year-old. But if you're a 15-year-old and you're still treating the Lord like you're a 5-year-old, that is bad. Colossians chapter 3, look at verse 23. And whatsoever you do, do it heartily. Now watch this, as to the Lord and not unto men. So I'm talking about that work ethic, talking about that personal responsibility. Do it heartily, as to the Lord, knowing that of the Lord you shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for ye serve the Lord Christ. Go with me to 1 Corinthians 10. 1 Corinthians 10. Look at verse 31. Whatsoever therefore you eat or drink or whatsoever you do, do all to the glory of God. So whatever we're doing, this idea of personal responsibility, we're doing it in a way that honors the Lord. So our children ought to be encouraged to succeed in whatever field they enter, but also to take personal responsibility for their words and actions. And that includes that responsibility to the Lord, using whatever success the Lord gives you to honor the Lord in those things. So we emphasize the importance and blessing of work. We emphasize personal responsibility. Number three is this. We emphasize, and we kind of alluded to it, now we'll just say it straight out. We emphasize character over talent. Something I say often because I think it's an important thing that we understand. Let's think for a moment about the world we live in. Are there highly talented people in our world? Yeah. In many different areas. And some of those people are lousy people, lousy human beings. I mean, they're great. They're great in what they do, but I wouldn't want to be around them. I think about the guy who was the New England Patriots, what was he? He wasn't a running back. I forget what his position was. Hernandez, I believe his name. Man, that guy had great talent. And didn't he turn out to be a loser, big time loser? Ends up killing himself eventually just because he just gets into a rabbit hole. It's like a snowball of bad decisions. Now, that guy had great talent. He didn't have very good character. He could not do right for anything. So we live in a world of highly talented people who have very little character. That's just the state of a sin-cursed world. And I mentioned this, so I'll just say it. A quick observation of professional sports proves this point. There's people who can run up and down a court, never break a sweat, hardly breathe hard, jump up, touch the ceiling, slam the basketball down in, grab the hoop, do through 360 and run back the other way. I mean, they have great talent. That's a little exaggeration, but they have great talent. But there's people with great character who, if you give them a few hours, they'll get from one end of the court to the other. But let me tell you, those are the people who are the movers and really movers and shakers. Those are people who make the world work. Okay? Character type people. Unfortunately, many of those who succeed in sports because of talent fail in life because of a lack of character. And I mentioned the Hernandez, and we could go on and on. I read an article about a guy. He was one of the top draft choices, I believe. I don't think he was the number one, but he was like in the top three or four of the year he got drafted. But he never succeeded. I mean, he had talent. This guy had talent like coming out of his ears talent. Everyone wanted him. But as soon as he got onto a team, he just couldn't do what he was supposed to do. He got involved in things he shouldn't have got involved in. He wouldn't listen to the coach. He just did his own thing. And eventually, after about 5 or 6 years, he was out of the NFL, and now he's in prison. Man who oozed talent, but had no character. Now, one way, so if we're going to emphasize character over talent, we're not saying it's bad to have talent, we're just emphasizing the character over the talent. So one way to emphasize character over talent is to praise character more than talent. So someone gets up and they sing a special. Okay? And they sing a special, and you're worried at this moment. I can see it in you say, is he going to start singing? No, I'm not. Okay. You can put those fears to rest. So when he gets up, someone gets up and sings a special, and they do a great job. I mean, we do have some talented people in our church, and I appreciate their service. Now, it's not wrong to say, you know, that was a good special, you know, that blessed my heart. All that is good. But you know, the thing that is most commendable is not how well they sing. Because a lot of that, now some of it is learned, some of it is groomed, some of it is, you know, they take instruction, they develop that. But some people have natural talent, and then they build on that, which is good. But you know the thing that's more commendable? It takes character to prepare, to get the song ready, to get the words to Brother Choma so he can put them on the wall, to go to meet up with Brother Maley so he can approve whether or not you're ready to sing. All that is the character behind it. So the performance is just for a few moments. But what goes behind that performance is should be a lot of work, and that is what's even more commendable. When we do our Christmas program, what happens in about 45 minutes to an hour, I think the singers do a great job, the readers do a great job, people flipping on lights do a good job, sound, all that, it all comes together. If you're here probably the last practice of Saturday, we're all like, we think it's going to work, and it all comes together. But you know there's hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of work. And even if someone slips up on their line, even if someone, just say, for example, someone's coming up here and they trip up on the platform. What? I didn't say any name. So someone trips on the platform, or someone gets a word wrong in their song, or someone, you know, in the line, they get ahead of the other person, they have to stop, and they, oops. Okay, you know what? That never bothers me. Because I understand the hours and hours and hours of work that went into it. The character is so much more important than talent. And that's what we ought to look at in our kids. The character that goes behind it. We want them to do well. We want them to succeed. That's what the heart of a parent wants their children to succeed. But we don't want to just brag on their success. We want to praise them for the character that went behind that. The work, all that went into making that performance or doing that thing. So one way to emphasize character is then to praise the character more than the talent. Go with me to Proverbs, Proverbs 27. Now, why is that important? Well, because Proverbs 27 explains why it's important to praise the character more than the talent. Proverbs 27, look at verse 21. As the fining pot for silver and the furnace for gold, watch this, so is a man to his praise. That's what refines him. In other words, that's what he starts focusing on that. That's what he becomes. So what you praise in your child tends to be what your child begins focusing on, because people like praise and they do more of it. So we want to praise the character because that helps them become the right type of person. So people tend to focus on that which they are praised. Quickly, I got to move quickly here. It is not wrong to help your child develop his talents and skills. There's nothing wrong with that. God probably gifted your children in certain ways, and as you help develop those gifts, that's great. But a parent should always stress that there needs to be character behind the talent. It's not enough just to have good talent, you need character. Now why? I mean, watch this. To me, this is a great statement. It is character that sustains, refines, and improves the talent your child has. So whatever talent, whatever is God has gifted your child with, you add character to it, and that's what really makes that talent shine. And so the character is always what improves that talent. Talent is great. Develop that, you know, if they have painting skills, singing skills, construction skills, demolition skills, whatever skills they may have, help develop it. That's great. But help them understand, okay, it's like this. All my kids played the piano, took piano lessons, and could play at different levels. And for each of them, we somewhere along the line, I think we told each of them this. I know, pretty sure I told Bethany this and Holly. I'm not sure after that. It gets kind of murky after the first couple kids. But you will be as good a piano player as you put the work and effort into it. Because it's not enough to have talent. It takes work and effort. So we'll give you the lessons. They had good piano teachers, I think. Good piano teachers. We'll put you in a place where you can develop it, but how well it develops is how many hours you want to put in the practice. And so we're trying to teach them the character is more important than talent. Talent's good. I'm not in any way criticizing talent, but the character helps that talent and in many ways is better than that talent. And the last, number four, is this. So things we're emphasizing, trying to develop character, emphasize work ethic, emphasize personal responsibility, emphasize character over the talent. The fourth one is this, emphasize education. This is slightly different, but I think it's an important one to think about. Academic education, that is in addition to, but obviously not a replacement of, spiritual education is important in a child's development. The reason is a good education can provide more opportunities as a child enters adulthood. It won't guarantee success, but it does open doors. And that is the world we live in. Sometimes you can have all the experience, but if you don't have that degree, they don't look your way. So a good education can provide more opportunities as a child enters adulthood. I'll give you an example. Go with me to Daniel chapter 1. Now I'm going to refine that statement slightly here in a minute, but we'll leave it at that for right now. Daniel chapter 1. Because I'm not a person who believes that every single person ought to go to college. I'm not telling you that. Daniel chapter 1. But there's education that doesn't entail 4 years of college or 8 years or whatever you may do. Daniel 1, look at verse 3. And the king spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel and of the king's seed and of the princes. This would include Daniel and the three Hebrew children. Children whom was no blemish, but well favored and skillful in all wisdom and cunning and knowledge and understanding science, such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. And so here's Daniel going to have this opportunity now to be learning these things, and eventually that's going to come back, and it's going to be part of what the Lord uses and put him in a place of authority there. So a good education can provide more opportunities as a child enters adulthood. Now, I'm going to call time out for a moment, take off my pastor hat, put on my school administrator hat, okay? And I'm going to speak to you just like I spoke to parents multiple times, teacher-parent meetings, especially when the school year started. I tell them there's three things you can do to help your child always do better in school. Now, I'm thinking now children not in secondary ed, especially not college, probably not as much high school, but would include high school, but mostly you think elementary ed into middle school, junior high, and going into high school. There's three things that always helps a child do well educationally, and that is this. These are real simple things. Ensure your child gets plenty of sleep and a good breakfast. You know what the biggest problem in our bus ministry is? Kids who stay up to 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning and can't get up and get on the bus. You know what the biggest problem with that is? Parents who let their kids stay up to 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. Now, I was a straight-A student in school, and I'm not bragging, I just was. But can I tell you one of the reasons I was? Up until 12th grade, I'm talking about, I didn't go to kindergarten. It wasn't required, and so I didn't go. But I started first grade. And so from first grade all the way through 11th grade, up until I started 12th grade, my bedtime, that was strictly enforced, 9 p.m. Now, everyone in my school, I think, stayed up later. My mom was never as impressed by that. She said, but everyone in your school who lives here is going to go to bed at 9. Huh. I see how that works. Now, when I turned 12th grade, my mom said, now you're in 12th grade, I'm going to be a little bit nicer with you. You can stay up till 10. That was it, at 10 o'clock. There was a special. It was an Elvis special about the life of Elvis. And I started at 8 and went to 10. And so I got the first hour in. And I was really into it. And I said, come on, Mom, it's only one more hour. And my mom said, it's only one more hour. She said, okay, I'll tell you how it is. Go to bed. 9 o'clock was my bedtime until now. You know, one of the reasons I think I did well in school is because while I sat in school, here's how I sat in school. Here's how a lot of other people sat in school. Okay. Anyways, you get the idea. Moving quickly. I get too much into the stories, not enough into the things. So here's the second thing. Expect your child to do his best. Expect your child to do his best. Don't accept a C when he can do a B. I'm not too keen on requiring your kids to get A's because not every child can be an A student. But I think every child probably can be a BC student. There's no reason to get a D or an F, for sure. But most kids, if they do their best, they can do a B. They don't accept a C when they can do a B. And here's the last one. Hold your child responsible more than the teacher. I had a teacher in second grade. I think I told you this already. Mrs. Armstrong. Now, because it's 2021, I got to say this. I am not meaning this in a negative way, in a racial prejudice way. She was a big black lady. Okay? And everyone in my school in second grade was black except for one kid. That was me. I was the only white kid in second grade in my entire school. And so I always stuck out. Literally, I stuck out. I mean, it was just like, there's a white kid who's having his name be white. Now, this lady, this is an all-black school. She had absolute military boot camp discipline in her class. Second grade kids. When we were in the hallway, you had to stand straight, right shoulder against the wall, do not flinch. Every kid in the second grade in her class stood in the hallway just like this. Except for one kid who's looking around like this. Fortunately, Mrs. Armstrong wasn't there, but the student teacher was, and she said, you know what's going to happen if Mrs. Armstrong comes out? And this kid said, that was me. I say, oh, I'm so glad. You know why she had perfect discipline? She had a leather strap this long, this thick. And she used it all the time. You're in reading circle. And she said, what's, like, you start reading, and you couldn't get the word the out, she'd say, hold out your hand. Whack! The word is the. The boy ran, quit crying, ran home. I mean, that's how disciplined she was. She told me one time, and this was not reading, this was spelling. I was in this, there's like six of us there, and the first kid, she said, put a T on the board. And this kid put a line down and crossed right across the middle and looked like a plus sign. And she said, that's not a T, that's a plus sign. Hold out your hand. Bam! Next kid. I'm third kid. That's first, second kid. And I'm already sweating. I'm like, what is a T? What is a T? I can't remember. What is a T? Second kid. Put a T on the board. That's not a T. Bam! Third kid. I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, I don't know. I'm just doing anything. She goes, close enough. I'm like, oh, there. Wow. Now, let me tell you, I wouldn't want my kid to have a teacher like that. She had no compassion. No, I mean, and you might be thinking I'm exaggerating. I am not exaggerating with that teacher. Those stories are true. She was disciplined. Maybe she was an ex-Marine. I don't know, drill sergeant. But she had complete discipline. Now, that's way too much for a second grade class, I think, personally. I mean, it's like, whoa, they're just second graders. But let me tell you, I'm not looking to blame a teacher. I want my child to do well. And unless the teacher is, that may be a little extreme, but unless the teacher is doesn't care or is just doing a lousy job, then I would go talk to the teacher. Other than that, I'm looking at my child and saying, This is where the Lord has you right now in that class with that teacher. You need to do your best. You need to be responsible for your work, doing what you're supposed to be doing, and not putting the blame on the teacher or other people. You need to do your best. Okay? Now, quickly, I got to move on. as your child enters adulthood, it's good to encourage him to continue his education. So he goes through grade school, through middle school / junior high, goes into high school. That's all required of him. Now he gets ready to adulthood. You should encourage him to continue his education. Most of the time you get your education before you get married, before you start having kids. After that, it gets hard to have to go further. So you encourage him to continue his education. Now, that's college, yes, but there's other things. There's trade school. There's some type of apprenticeship. There's some other types of continued education. But you ought to, don't just get out of school and then go flip burgers or pump gas, which you don't do a whole lot of that now anyways. But don't waste your life doing nothing. Get as much education as you can when you're young. And for many people, college isn't the answer. Trade school is much better for them, or some type of apprenticeship, but continue education. So emphasize education, fourth area of character. All right, let's get to the end. A parent can be the greatest influence in the development of a child's character. We start teaching them how to work, teach them to take responsibility, teach them to put the Lord first in that responsibility. We tell them about how important character is, that goes behind that talent. We start telling them, okay, you need to do well in school and education. That's going to stay with you. That's a good inner development. So we have great influence in development of child's character. Now, our primary goal as a Christian parent, as Christian parents, is for our children to live for God. If you're a Christian parent, that's your goal. That's your desire. That's your heart. You want your child to grow up and live for Jesus. I don't think any parent, when their kids are little, sits there and has dreams about, well, I bet, man, it's going to be something when you grow up and you sit in the bar. Boy, that's going to be something. Man, I just can't wait. Okay, that's not how we think. We think, man, I want you in church. I want you reading your Bible. I want you to be a soul winner. I want you to live for Jesus. I want you to raise your children in church. That's the heart of a Christian parent. We want our children to live for God. That's our primary goal, our heart of every Christian parent. Now, our secondary goal, because even though that is true, that's our primary, but there's a secondary goal, I think, of most Christian parents. And that is this, for our children to be productive members of society. We want them to be productive members of society. And that happens through character. We don't want our children to grow up and are dependent on the government. We want them to have some character. They can work. They can do some things. We don't want them, you know, the thing you see on TV, you know, they're living in some Section 8 house. It's a mess, and no one works, and everyone's lazy, and they can't wait for the monthly check to come in because that's how they live. No one wants that for their kids. We want to be productive members of society. Now, both of those goals are furthered as we emphasize character development as our children grow up. Character development. They're more likely to live for God if they have the right character, and they are more likely to be productive members with the right character. All right. We'll kind of hit this from a little different angle next week. Let's pray and ask.